you beautiful people, and welcome to the bit before the theme music. This is the bit before the theme music. Yeah, we're on the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just me and my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Sharp Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack, and this is the interactive bit. Are you ready? Why aren't you ready? Well, get ready. Are you ready now? Well, just, it's not, you don't have to do much. I'm not asking you to, like, sit down. I'm asking you to prepare a few words. Are you ready now? Good. That was the interactive bit. Well done. I thought that was very good. I haven't really got much to report. Oh, a couple of people wanted to watch my Batman film. That's nice. So, yeah, they'll get the opportunity. The lucky people. If you want to watch it, you know, let me know. It is brilliant. It is, but it's also very, very low rent and not brilliant if you're not into that sort of thing. I mean, you don't have to like Batman. It's nothing like Batman. It is because the main character is Batman, but it's like a mockumentary. Maybe I'll put a couple of links on Facebook and you can have a watch a couple of clips. And if you like the idea of it, you think, actually, that looks like it might be a bit of fun. Maybe I'll sort something out so that you can watch it. Anyway, that's enough about me talking about the Bat film, because that's got nothing to do with Christmas. But this next bit has got something to do with Christmas, because we're talking about Christmas stuff, aren't we? That's the podcast, isn't it? That's what it is. So let's just get on with it. Go on. Do that. Do you know what, boys and girls, this Christmas all over the world thing, this one is actually from the UK. Because, you know, if you're not in the UK, then this is like Christmas all over the world, isn't it? And this is one that I am familiar with, but I've never really got involved with. And what it is going for a Christmas Day swim. Now, obviously, being in the Northern Hemisphere on Christmas Day, it's pretty damn cold to be going swimming, and most of these are in the sea. It's not just like in the local pool. This is actually swimming in the sea, so it's going to be even colder. And they're all over the country, up in Scotland, Wales, Ireland, all around the UK. People go for a swim on Christmas Day. Now, this is a quick list of ones that I found that were really easy to find, because I found this Open Swimmers website. You get them in Bude, which is a place in Devon, Exmouth, also down that neck of the woods, Felixstowe, Loughrea, which is Galway, Ireland, Hunstanton in Norfolk, Lowestoft, not sure where that is, Porthcawl, which is Wales, Weymouth, which I've been to a few times actually. All of those are on Christmas Day. Now, but on the same website, they had another 17 that were on Boxing Day. And they also had a bunch on New Year's Day as well. So it's not just Christmas Day, but I'm only going to look at the Christmas Day ones. And there's a few that I want to focus in on. Some of the larger ones, you know, they're all pretty much the same thing. When I was looking it up, some of them, it's not even organised. You just turn up on the beach. Normally they're around about 11 o'clock-ish, depending on where you go. Some are earlier, some are later. You go down the beach. You might be dressed in fancy dress. You might not be. You might be in a swimming costume. I don't know. And you go for a swim in the sea. And that's it. And then you come out again. Yeah, and the first one I want to talk about is in Weymouth. Now, Weymouth is right on the south coast of England, slightly off to the west, and it's like a seaside town. I've been there. Did I go there this year? We were there this year. We went there this year. I've been there a couple of times. And some of them are free, like I said. Some of them you have to pay for, and it ranges in price. Like, some of them are just like minimum donation. One was like a suggested donation of a fiver. One went up to 20-odd quid. 20 quid just to go for a swim in the sea. It's like, can I just go a bit further down the beach and not have to pay you 20 notes? Which is really in the spirit of giving at Christmas. Anyway, there's one in Weymouth, right? And it's a Lions event. And if you're not familiar with the Lions, it's an international organisation, a bit like the Rotarians. There's other versions where pretty much it's just where they give to, it's just people that get together to give to charity and for good causes. And so this is organised by the Lions, and it's a swim 70 metres across the harbour. And It started, apparently, in 1948. There was a bet between a local publican, a bloke around a pub, and a taxi driver. They were good friends, and they had a bet that they wouldn't swim across the harbour on Christmas Day, and I guess they both did. And it's continued on since then. And they swim across the harbour, and they end up opposite the harbour master's office, and they had so many. Like, this last year, they had 425 swimmers and about 2,000 spectators. Isn't it lovely? 2,000 spectators. And they send them off in groups of 50. There's like 50 go across and the next 50. That would have been 9 groups going across. Yeah. I don't know if there's a prize if you're the fastest one. I don't know what the deal is, but it is a bit of a race. Yeah. So that's the Weymouth one. Sounds like fun. Then the one that's closest to me is apparently the biggest one in the UK. And this one is called the Bournemouth White Christmas Dip. I say Bournemouth, it's actually Boscombe, which is the next town along from Bournemouth, but they're pretty much connected, they're so close together. And they gather at the pier at 11 o'clock, and apparently it's £7.50 to have a go at this one, and they do like it if you sort of like sign a disclaimer, because you know, if you drown, they don't want it to be their fault. And they had 1,000 people this year, 1,000 people, £7.50 a head. You're looking at £7,500 there, and that's before like all the spectators have dipped in their pockets to give some cash as well. So that's a good one. Well done. Yeah, that's the closest one to me. That's probably about 20 miles away from where I live, maybe a bit more. I've never been to it. I've got better things to do on Christmas Day. For example, nursing a hangover. Then you've got Brighton, and this dates back to the 1860s. The 1860s. It's like nearly 200. Well, it's not nearly 200. It's like 160 years old. And it's apparently the oldest dip. And it was cancelled in 2015. Right? And it's like, no, we're not doing it anymore. It's like, what, you're going to close the whole beach, are you? So apparently people just were still going down there, but just moving further down the beach. So they just pick a different stretch of the beach. Because it's a long beach. It's a shingle beach. You know, shingle, the stones. It's a stony beach. That's not good on your tootsies. I've never liked going to shingle beaches. I feel like I'm being ripped off. It's like, oh, should we go down the beach? Yeah, cool, go down the shingle. It's like, well, this ain't a beach, is it? It's just stones into the sea. Give me sand. I want sand. But Brighton Beach is a popular beach, very famous beach. And yeah, so it was cancelled in 2015, but they reinstated it this year, I think. So now it's legal. I say legally going ahead. Now it's like, you know, it's sanctioned by the council. They're cool with it. They're like, all right, carry on. We'll let you do it. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Council, for letting me swim in the bloody sea. You dickhead. Right. So yeah, that's it. And this one is not really massively organised, but there's loads of people. They're all in fancy dress, and they're all going. I saw a lot of photos of it, and there's like these big waves, and people are just stood there freezing cold. It's tricky to swim when the sea is as wild as that, but they seem to be having a nice time, you know, so I'm not going to begrudge them it. Fair play to them. Yeah, that's the Brighton one. Like I say, cancelled in 2015, back in 2023. Now, the final one actually isn't in the beach. And there's a bit for me to read out. I'm going to read it from their website. This one takes place in the Serpentine, which is a lake in Hyde Park in London. And on Christmas Day, the swimming club there, a lot of the members, they go for a swim. And I'm going to read out what it says on their website. Here we go. The Serpentine Swimming Club's Christmas Morning Handicap is swum over a 100-yard course for the Peter Pan Cup. The club's Christmas Day race has been held every year since 1864. In the early years, it was customary for the winner to be presented with a medal. Author J.M. Barrie became associated with the Christmas Day race in 1903, so it had been going 40 years by then, and he donated the Peter Pan Cup, because this coincided with the play Peter Pan's debut on the London stage, because obviously J.M. Barrie, as you know, was the writer of Peter Pan. Now, he dished out the cup to the winner every year, up to 1932. And then after that, the honour fell to a man called Albert Greenbury, who was a dedicated member since 1909 and served as the club president from 1935 to 1955. That's 20 years. Yeah, and to this day, the Greenbury family continue the tradition. Albert's granddaughter, Lucy Harris, is a current member and races all through the year. So the Serpentine Christmas Day race for the Peter Pan Cup is probably the oldest continuously swam race in the world, having been raced every year since 1864, apart from in 2020, because the race had to be cancelled due to government regulations because of COVID. But not on their website. This is the Serpentine Swimming Club's website. Not on their one. I read elsewhere that in 2010, the lake was frozen over, and so they couldn't really do the race then either. But it doesn't mention that here, so I'm not quite sure what happened in 2010 exactly. But, you know, I don't know if they would have broken the ice for the full stretch of the race, which is like 100 yards. It says here, next to an Olympic 100-meter freestyle race, it's almost the only swimming race reported on throughout the world, with the winner's name appearing in media from the USA to Malaysia. And there are people, they list on the website, that have swum in it around 50 times. 50 times they swam in the race. Yeah. Now, this is a bit that I really enjoyed and found really interesting, because it talks about the female swimmers and the Christmas Day race for the Peter Pan Cup, because they also had another cup called the Wendy Cup. You know, Peter Pan and Wendy. So the winning woman would get the Wendy Cup. So it says, by the early 2000s, there was no gender distinction in the races at the club. All swimmers competing as equals under the eyes of the handicapper. Now, I don't know what a handicapper is. I don't know what that means. I don't know what rules they set for you to be able to go into a race. But it says, the exception was the Christmas Day race for the Peter Pan Cup. So yeah, they were still, for the Peter Pan Cup, differentiating between men and women. It says, during the 1990s, to encourage the handful of women swimmers, a small Wendy Cup was provided each year by the club to be presented to the first woman home. As with the Peter Pan Cup, this was retained each year by the winner. Many saw this as unfair, as all swimmers in the race were competing under a handicap, and the small cup provided by the club was in no manner as grand as the Peter Pan trophy presented by the race sponsors, which was the Greenbury family, who we mentioned earlier. The AGM of 2003 sought to rectify this. The concept was by no means acceptable to all at the meeting. The compromise outcome was for the first swimmer home to be deemed the winner of the Christmas Day race, with the Peter Pan Cup presented to the first man home and a Wendy Cup to the first woman. And it also says no issue arose for the 2003 Christmas Day race. Now, they talk about how Emmy Hunt twice won the Christmas Day race, but was only once been a Peter Pan Cup winner. In 2004... the race was won by the very popular veteran, Emmy Hunt. Many, including the race sponsors, the Greenbury family, thought it very strange and unsatisfactory that a small alternative cup was presented to the race winner rather than the grand Peter Pan trophy. Now, this issue was addressed at the 2005 AGM. So what they're saying is, right, she won, she gets this pissant little cup, and the first bloke across the line gets this great big lovely cup. It's like, look at me. She's like, yeah, but I won. He goes, yeah, but look at the size of my cup. And that's exactly what he did, probably. I know, it's kind. Yeah, so, and then it says, the issue was addressed at the 2005 AGM with a proposal that the race winner would be presented with the Peter Pan Cup, irrespective of gender. The motion was passed virtually unanimously. That's brilliant, virtually. Now, I don't know how many people they had voting there, but was it just like one dickhead at the back going, no, I hate women. Is that what was going on? Because women are great, mate. You might not know this, but women are fabulous. And you, sir, are a dickhead. There you go, I've said it now. And I think we all agree. Yeah, it says, the motion was passed virtually unanimously, with many who opposed the proposal at the 2003 AGM speaking this time strongly in favour of it. And then Emmy Hunt won the Christmas Day race for the Peter Pan Cup again in 2015, and this time received the grand trophy, and that's the Peter Pan Cup. And here's a question, did she also get the little Wendy one as well? Did she like pop it in the top of the Peter Pan Cup? I don't know, maybe they did away with the Wendy Cup. It's like there's just one cup to rule them all, one cup to bind them. Yeah, there you go. One last little thing, like when they all go out there, it's really early, it's like 9 o'clock, yeah? So at 9 o'clock they have this race. I don't know if they have like loads of people going to watch. I don't know, because it's a swimming club thing. So if you're not part of the swimming club, you can't go into it. And I've looked at the pictures, and they're not in fancy dress. This is just their swimming club does this race. And one last little thing I wanted to say is, when they all go out there at 9 o'clock in the morning, they're like led out by a bagpipe player, like a lone bagpipe player marches out, and they all line up as he's playing his bagpipes, and then they dive in and go for a swim. Yeah. So there you go. That's the tradition. Now, I want to say, I have never been to the one in Bournemouth, the local one to me. I've never been to the one in Weymouth, which is the second closest. But on three separate occasions, I have gone for a swim on Christmas Day. And I can tell you, all three of those times were when I was in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah, I was twice, I spent Christmas in Australia, and I went for a swim on Christmas Day. Once, I was in New Zealand, and we went to the beach, and I went for a swim. Yeah, a lot warmer. Look better than doing it in the UK. But I would like doing that. I don't mind getting in the old cold water occasionally. I'll have a swim. I have cold showers every day, so I think I could handle that. But it's not something I've done. I think it's because it's such a far drive. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to drive all the way down to Bournemouth, and then I've got to have a swim, and then I've got to get dressed, and I've got to drive all the way back. And then my wife's like, what time did you call this? We've already had dinner. I'm like, well, you should have had it later, shouldn't you? And she's like, no, you should have driven quicker. And I was like, I'm not going to break the speed limit for your Christmas dinner. None of that would happen. So that is Christmas Day swimming in the UK. That's that.
Do you hear what I hear?
You know, when fighting the post-Christmas blues, I like to remember that it's better to have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. I have become a star pupil of the Christmas Carol through the Jack Ford Total Christmas School of Critical Analysis. Now, when I watch an adaptation of the classic, I am quick to note how closely it follows the text. The final test is usually whether the boy in his Sunday clothes will say Walker near the end. He does say it in Disney's Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey. Even with its dark tone and awkward 3D visuals, this version is still pretty true to the source material. So when something is said that does not seem accurate, you can't help but notice. In this film, when Scrooge approaches his home and that infamous door knocker, he drops his keys. His response? Bugger it. I know this was not in the original story. In fact, my do you hear what I hear sense started tingling. Bugger it? Is it kind of like bugger off? Another UK slang phrase that you will commonly hear tossed around in Brit holiday films like Love Actually, The Holiday, Last Christmas, and Bridget Jones' Diary. This is just not a phrase that you'll hear or use in the US, so I naively wondered what it might mean and where it came from. We are barely into the 2024 season of our Happy Little Christmas podcast, and I'm already venturing into unholy territory. Whereas I thought bugger was a mild exclamation, similar to how you might say darn or shoot in the States, I soon learned it is a bit cruder. The reason may stem from its origins, which have roots in xenophobia and religious persecution. How festive. It starts in the 10th century when a splinter Christian movement arose in Bulgaria. The devotees believed that their bodies were temples, so you did not need to build churches. The religious sect in question was called the Bogomils, and their focus was on concepts like illusion and individual enlightenment, and not on the more common topics of sin and repentance. This was considered heresy by the Catholic Church, and so the French used the word Beaujour to refer and label the religious movement. The word Beaujour came from the Latin word Bulgaris, or Bulgarian. The English translation became bugger, and it first appeared in 1330. The original meaning was heresy. However, in an effort to discredit the Bogomils, they were accused of various sins, including sodomy and bestiality. Soon these bigoted notions were attributed to all Bulgarians, and they gained a reputation across medieval Europe from practicing certain acts of cleansing their bodily temples. The word bugger evolved, so it became less associated with heresy and the Bogomils, and instead was used to describe what were considered deviant sex acts. Now, this takes us back to the common, more casual use of this term. It has lost some of its initial impact, but if you try to use it in front of my Nana or any small kids, you can just bugger off. Cheers and Happy Christmas.
Do you know what? The first time I listened to that, I thought, oh, where are we going with this one? Because I know what that word means. It's not one that I frequently use, but I am familiar with it. I'll tell you this, though. When I was 4 years old, right? No, it was before I was four. I was probably three or four. I used to go to play school, play group it was called, play school. You know, which is like kindergarten, you might call it in your country. I don't know. Anyway, it's preschool sort of thing. We used to go to this meeting in the local village hall, bunch of kids all running around screaming. And what me and a young boy called, I'm not going to, actually I don't want to say his name, he might sue me, because he'd be like, I never shouted that when I was 3 years old. He did, because I was there with him. We used to stand, it was a big hall with really high ceilings. We'd stand at one end of the hall just shouting bugger as loud as we could. And I don't know why it was that word. We'd just stand there because it used to echo. Well, I'm not going to do it now on the podcast, but that's the word we'd shout. Two little boys, 3 and 4 years old, just shouting that at the top of our lungs at the same time. And I remember years later talking to one of my mates about it when we were like at school, normal school. And he told me that sometimes the ladies that used to run it, one of them would say bugger. And that's where we'd got it from. Anyway, when I was 3, I went home one time and said to my mum at play school today, me and Stuart, I'm not saying his name, me and such shouted bugger, and my mum went ballistic at me. Absolutely ballistic. So that's the story of bugger. Now, thanks for that, Bob. It'll be back later on, but right now, we're doing this, whether you like it or not. This is the quiz. Okay, so last week's quiz was pretty difficult. This week's quiz, I think it's a bit easier, but it might not be. It's easier if you know all the answers. It's not easier if you don't know any of them. We've discussed this before. That's how quizzes work. I'm getting straight into it. Question number one. Vigilia supper is a traditional Christmas Eve meal in which Eastern European country? Now, it's spelt with a W, but in brackets it says W is pronounced as V. Okay, so that's a clue for you, possibly. Question number two. Who collaborated with Sir Terry Wogan on the 2009 hit Silver Bells? Silver Bells, Silver Bells, it's Christmas. Now, a lot of you might be thinking, who on earth is Terry Wogan? Well, he's not on earth anymore, he's dead. But he used to be possibly the most famous TV and radio presenter in the whole of the UK. And he's a national treasure, was a national treasure. And he had two Christmas singles. And the reason I put this in there, because you're thinking, yeah, well, I won't know that because I don't live in England. No, you don't live in England. Or you might if you do live in England. But here's the thing. I've talked about it on the show. That might help you. It might not help you. I'll give you a clue, right? This guy that sung the song with him also had a very famous song that you might know. It's a British Christmas song. It's not much help. That's all I'm giving you. Question number three. Which famous New York business complex got its first Christmas tree in 1931 and in 2021 the 90th anniversary, was a 79 feet high, 46 feet wide, 12 ton tree, and it had its lighting ceremony on the 1st of December. And do you know how they got it there? Yeah? That 12 ton tree. Do you know how they got it to that place in New York? Yeah? I carried it. All right? On my shoulders. And I didn't whinge once. That's not necessarily true. Question number three. In which film does Emma Thompson receive a Christmas gift of a Joni Mitchell CD from her cheating husband Alan Rickman? And she doesn't get the necklace she thought she was going to get. Okay, what film is that? You know that one, that's easy. Question number five. In the 1994 animated film Mole's Christmas, adapted from The Wind in the Willows, the voice of Mole was provided by which actor who had played the Fifth Doctor in Doctor Who? Okay? Now, you're thinking, I've never heard of this film. No, you probably haven't. I haven't. But you're not going to have much trouble with the whole Fifth Doctor bit, are you? Well, if you are, you're going to get it wrong, aren't you? I did the maths. I figured out who the Fifth Doctor was. I'm very proud of myself. I got the question right. Quick question. This isn't one of the ones in the 10 questions. Am I coming across as a bit angry in this episode? Because I'm not angry. I'm really happy, actually. But I feel like I'm being a bit bullshy the way I'm talking. So for that, I can only apologise. Now let's move on with question number six. In what European language is... Okay, you ready? Vesela Koleda, the Christmas greeting. Okay, Vesela Koleda. Question number seven. Who was the producer of arguably the most famous Christmas album, A Christmas Gift for You, which was released in 1963 and included songs by The Ronettes, The Crystals, Darling Love, and others? Yeah, they had others on the album. Question number whatever. In which 1951 film does Bob Hope, as the swindler and racetrack title character... That's not an easy sentence to get through, is it? Let's say that, try that again. So he's a swindler and he's a racetrack tout and he's also the title character of the film. In what film does he have to pay Moose Moran $10,000 by Christmas Eve? Now, if you just said to me, what film is Moose Moran in? I would have said, I ain't got a clue, Mush! But the rest of it did help me, so that's good. Question number something. Who had a 1980 hit with the song December Will Be Magic Again? Whose opening lines are, December will be magic again. I take a husky to the ice while Bing Crosby sings White Christmas. Oh, makes you feel nice. I forget how the next bit goes, but that's pretty much how she sings it. Yeah. And the last one. Traditionally, Dutch children leave what out for Santa on Christmas Eve instead of stockings? Yeah, what are they leaving out for him? Hey, what do you reckon? Well, we'll find out at the end. Okay, that's your 10, is it? Yeah. Right, here come your answers. Hold on tight, kids. Question number one. Vigilia supper is a traditional Christmas Eve meal in which Eastern European country? The answer is Poland. Yep, Poland. Question number two. Who collaborated with Sir Terry Wogan on the 2009 hit Silver Bells? Well, the answer was Alid Jones. And Alid Jones, he sung, We're Walking in the Air. Yeah. So they had two singles. The previous year, they did a version of Little Drummer Boy, where they did the bits like Bing Crosby and David Bowie. And then the following year, they did Silver Bells. Silver Bells wasn't quite so successful, so they didn't bother releasing another one after that. But yeah, and all the proceeds went to charity as well, which was nice. Question number three. Which famous New York business complex got its first Christmas tree in 1931? And in 2021, it had a 79-foot high, 46-wide, 12-ton tree that was delivered by hand by Jack Ford and had its lighting ceremony on the 1st of December. Of course it is the Rockefeller Center, isn't it? Yes. Question number four. In which film does Emma Thompson receive a Christmas gift of a Joni Mitchell CD from her cheating husband, Alan Rickman? And that is, of course, Love, actually. Question number five. In the 1994 animated film Mole's Christmas, adapted from The Wind and the Willows, the voice of Mole was provided by which actor who had played the Fifth Doctor in Doctor Who? That actor was Peter Davison. Yes. Oh, this is a little aside question. Am I being a little bit bullshy in the way I'm talking in this episode? The answer is yes. Could you please tone it down a little bit? I'll do my best. I will do my best. Question number six. In what European language is Vesela Koleda, the Christmas greeting? That is Bulgaria. I did not have a clue about that. Do you know what? I don't think I ever get these Christmas greetings in a foreign language right. Occasionally I do, if it's something obvious like Feliz Navidad, which is French, by the way. It's not, it's Spanish. It was a joke. It's Spanish. Don't get angry. Don't email me. Or do email me, but email me about other stuff, not that. Right. Question. No, I don't care. Who was the producer of arguably the most famous Christmas album, A Christmas Gift for You, which was released in 1963 and included songs by The Ronettes, The Crystals, Darling Love, and others? That was, of course, Phil Spector. Well done, Phil. Next one. In which 1951 film does Bob Hope, who plays the title character, have to pay Moose Moran $10,000 by Christmas Eve? That is, of course, The Lemon Drop Kid. And here's a little callback to you. Remember Silver Bells, you know, by Terry Wogan and Alan Jones? Well, that was first in The Lemon Drop Kid, wasn't it? Because he's ringing the bell. And this is a well-known fact, but you might not know it. Originally, they wanted to call them Tinkle Bells. Tinkle Bells, Tinkle Bells. But then someone told them, well, you don't really want to use that word because it means doing a wee in the UK. So you'll be singing about doing a wee. Wee wee bells, wee wee bells, everyone's peeing in the city. Right, that's true, that is. Not the bit about everyone peeing in the city. Well, it probably is true about that. It's Christmas time, isn't it? Everyone's had a few drinks. They probably are peeing in the street. Maybe they should have called it Tinkle Bells. Next question. In which... Oh, I don't know. Next question. Who had a 1980 hit with the song December will be magic again. I'm not going through the lyrics again. Her name is Kate Bush. Do you know Kate Bush? She sung Heathcliff, it's me, I'm Kathy, I've come home now. Whoa, 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 let me in through your window. Whoa. How was that? Really good. Question, oh, it's the last one. Are you ready? Easy one, kids. Traditionally, Dutch children leave what out for Santa on Christmas Eve instead of stockings? Clogs. And I'll tell you what, kids, you're not going to fit an Xbox in a pair of clogs, are you? No, you're not. Actually, I thought those Dutch kids left them out on, not on Christmas Eve, on what's his name's day? St. Nicholas's Day, which is the 6th of December. So they might want to get, I might be wrong, maybe they do it both times. Maybe they're just chucking their clogs out all the time. You know, hoping to get filled with Xboxes and sweets, I don't know. Anyway, that's your 10 questions. Do you want to know what I scored? I tell ya, I scored 8. Yeah, 8. Proud of that. Didn't get the 2 foreign language ones. Got the rest of them. So that's me. And now it's this. Okay, boys and girls, well, I'm going to try and put a happy spin on it. Here we go. Hey, boys and girls, it's joke of the week, or episode, or something. And it's a Christmas joke, of course, and it's really funny. So hooray for funny things. Are you ready? I hope I haven't done this one before. Why is it becoming so difficult to buy advent calendars? Because their days are numbered. Hey! It's not difficult to buy advent calendars. It's not difficult at all. But other than that, what a great joke! Yay! Lord Robert of Baker is back now, and I've got to say, Bob, your latest episode of Festive Foreign Film Fans was a phenomenal.
Thanks, Jack. As I noted last time, my desire in this segment is to find inexpensive ways to keep the holiday spirit going year-round. We don't want you to spread Christmas cheer only in December and then go into hibernation for the rest of the year. It is so important to remain optimistic and positive, as there already is too much apathy and hostility in the world. Today's idea does have a little cost, but it is mainly brought together with effort and joy. Plus, this will provide a fun way to build community. You start with what is known as a giving plate. This should be an inexpensive dish that you plan to give away. On the back of the plate, using a Sharpie marker, write the numbers 1 through 12 and write your name next to number 1 and number 12. Then fill this plate with a food item that you like to bake and are proud to share. Next, think of someone who could use a happy surprise and deliver them the full plate. Explain that the concept is for them to enjoy the home-baked gift, but also to think of someone else who might appreciate a similar boost in the future. They add their name next to number 2 on the back, and the plan is to make a treat to pass on to someone else the next month. This should continue every month, all year, until it circles back to you in December. The aim is to spread kindness, share the names of the previous recipients, and cultivate a little unexpected delight with a simple pleasure. We are also looking for your suggestions to spread a smile of joy. So let us know how you make a difference to those around you. We'll take your input and use it to throw our arms around the world.
That's another delightful one, isn't there? And what I like about that is you get like something to eat. I like eating. I like getting things to eat. The thing I don't like about it is I'd have to cook something, or I could get the wife to cook something. Yeah. That's a lovely idea though, isn't it? I'd love to think people would go out and do that. And just imagine if it does come back to you. What a surprise that would be. That'd be fantastic. Great one, Bob. And while I'm here, I have to, of course, recommend Festive Foreign Film Fans. It's Bob and his mate Mark, and they talk about festive foreign films. The latest one, they were talking about one from Italy, and it was really good, and you could tell that they both really enjoyed the film. And like I've said before a dozen times, that's what's great about this. It's not like your Hallmark fare. These are good quality films. They're just in a foreign language. And if you're there like going, oh man, I cannot be bothered to read subtitles, but I don't know what to say to that, so maybe you could get a dubbed version. I never like dubbed versions of films. It never seems right, does it, when their mouth's moving and the wrong words are coming out. I'd rather read the subtitles. I would, personally. Anyway, thanks, Bob. You're beautiful. Now we're doing this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a
humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
This episode's version of A Christmas Carol is called A Christmas Carol the Musical, and it was a TV film from 2004, and it was first shown on November the 28th on NBC, and it was actually the film adaptation of the stage musical A Christmas Carol, which was originally written by Alan Menken and Lynn Ahrens. And Alan Menken, you're probably there thinking, I recognise that name. Yeah, I recognise it too. And it's not because he works in my local library. Alan Menken wrote the songs for The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah, and Lynn Ahrens, she wrote Ragtime and also the Dr. Seuss musical, The Seussical. And I went to see that with the girls about 6 or 7 months ago. And it was good. Really good. Those guys originally wrote this musical, and it was it ran for 10 years, and every year they'd have some really big names playing Scrooge. They had Roddy McDowall, Roger Daltrey from The Who, yeah, Tim Curry. I've done a version of A Christmas Carol where Tim Curry played Scrooge, and the last time, because I think it ran for 10 years, and on the 10th year, they had Jim Dale, who you might know from the old Carry On films. Yeah. Very famous actor. And when it came out, this is what it said on Wikipedia. This is one of the reviews. It said, this is Brian Lowry from Variety magazine. He put, this is the 37th best production of A Christmas Carol and the third best musical behind Albert Finney's version and the Mr. Magoo version, which is high praise indeed. The 37th best production. Could you name 37? I should hope you could, because I've probably covered 37 by now, more than that. I've done over 100 episodes. Anyway, here's my question. What about the Muppets version? Is that not classed as a musical? I'd say it is. It's got songs in it. I'd say it's a musical. Yeah. Was he saying that's the fourth best musical version? Or did he forget about it? Shame on you, Brian Lowry. And it's a shame that he said that, because do you know what? I think this one's all right. I'm going to go through it. I'll tell you what's right, what's wrong. Now, Scrooge is played by Kelsey Grammer, who I'm sure you know because he was in Cheers. And of course, he played Frasier Crane in Frasier. And he's done a few Christmas films, actually. He did that, I forget what it's called. Is it Father, was it called Father Christmas? There's something about Father Christmas. He played Father Christmas. It was bloody awful. With Liz Hurley in it. It had Liz Hurley in it and it was still awful. Because you'd think I could sit there and just stare at Liz Hurley for an hour and a half. That didn't cut it. No. Naff it was. He also did one called Mr. St. Nick as well. And that was crud as well, if I remember correctly. Anyway, I don't want to whinge about that. We're going to talk about this. So they got this big opening at the start. And it's really nice, actually, because it pans over the city. And I read that it was filmed in Budapest. And the start reminded me a little bit of the start of A Muppet's Christmas Carol, actually, when it's sort of moving into the city there and just seeing all the people going around and doing their stuff in a city in Victorian times. Now, there's a little bit while this is going on where you see these boys run up to this man and they're trying to beg from him, and he's I'll clear off, and they nick his watch, and then the boy, one of them's wearing a top hat, and they go up to this other guy and give the watch to him, and it's kind of like a nod to the Artful Dodger out of Oliver Twist and Fagin. And then these same two boys go on this car and they're trying to nick stuff off it, and this bloke's like, oh, clear off. And that reminded me of the bit on A Muppet Christmas Carol, you know, where one of the, is it an apple or something's getting nicked, going, I'm being stolen, I'm being stolen. Anyway, that's this big opening. And then it goes to the Royal Exchange, which reminded me a bit of the George C. Scott version. You know, where George C. Scott actually is in the Exchange and you see him doing business there. Yeah. And this is the first opening number. It's called A Jolly Good Time Tonight, and everyone's singing and talking about how wonderful Christmas is. And then there's this bloke, turns out his name's Mr. Smythe, and he's there with his daughter, and he's like, oh, does anyone know where Mr. Scrooge is? I'm hoping he'll let me not pay my loan off this week or whatever. And everyone's like, oh, good luck with that. And then Scrooge comes in and he sort of comes hobbling in, he's all squinting and all hunched over, and the bloke bloke goes straight up to him and says, I was wondering if you could let me off this month's money because my wife's died. And Scrooge is like, I don't care if your wife's died. You owe me that money. Which isn't very nice, to be honest. Some bloke has just lost his wife and he's there with his daughter. She's lost her mum. Anyway, then they start singing this song, which is sort of like a twist on the Jolly Good Time Tonight, but it's Scrooge singing it. And do you know what? I'm going to play a little bit of the lyrics for you because this really did remind me of the Zeusicle, or Dr. Zeus, had like you might get the phrasing in a Dr. Zeus book. Have a listen.
Thank the Lord, Grace. Our profits have been huge.
You owe me interest too, sir. Your payment's overdue, sir.
Thank the Lord, we're not in debt to Scrooge.
If you don't plan to pay, sir, the law will find a way, sir.
You see what I mean? I think you get that, yeah. Then everyone leaves because the exchange is closing, and instead of two portly gentlemen, we get three non-portly gentlemen, and they come up and they do like a barbershop quartet bit where they're singing to him. It's not a quartet, is it? It's only three of them, a trio, barbershop trio, where they're singing, asking him for money, and he's telling them, no, you're not getting any. I'll play a bit of that as well.
We're collecting, sir, this Christmas time from gentlemen in town for the needy poor of London, sir. Now, what shall we put down?
And then Cratchit asks Scrooge if he can have Christmas Day off, and it's the usual, oh, yeah, well, I suppose you can have it off. And then Scrooge is heading back to his counting house, and Fred comes up to him on the way, and it's the usual there as well. Fred's like, you know, do you want to come around for dinner? Scrooge's like, no, why would I do that? Here's the thing, you'd think he would want to go around and get a free meal. If he's that tight, it's like, well, it's free food, isn't it? Just sit in the corner, I don't have to talk to anyone. But he doesn't. Anyway, then Scrooge walks back, and he actually walks past, this is a bit foreshadowing here. He walks past like a lamplighter, and she's like, oh, could you help me up, mister? He's like, no. And then there's like this street barker, and he's trying to sell tickets to this Christmas charity show that's going to be on Christmas Day, and Scrooge doesn't want to buy a ticket. And then there's a blind woman begging as well. She's like, could you give us some money? That's what begging is, asking people for money. You probably knew that. And those three all turn up a bit later on. Yes, they do. Then it cuts to Cratchit, and we meet all the Cratchits, and Tiny Tim turns up, and he's looking forward to Christmas, and Bob and him go to buy a... What do they have for Christmas dinner? A goose! No. They buy a chicken. Yeah, and there's a bit, right? Because they can't afford this, the biggest turkey, because they want a he wants a sovereign for that. And instead he's got chicken legs, and he's got this stall in front of him. He's not picking up chicken legs. They ain't chicken legs, they're chicken feet. You want chicken feet? No, I don't, mate. Thanks very much. He's like, we'll have a whole chicken. And he's like, oh, a small one, please. It costs him a shilling. Then Scrooge is walking back, and he hears someone saying his name, and then he sees the face in the door knocker. Then he goes in, and we see his housekeeper at this point, Mrs. Mops, her name is. Yeah, not Mrs. Dilber. They changed the name for some reason. Mrs. Mops. And Mrs. Mops is played by a lady called Sheila Reid. And she played Madge, or she was like the grandma character, in Benidorm. Yeah, for 45 episodes. Now, you're there going, what's Benidorm? Well, that was this really popular sitcom that ran from 2007 to 2016 in the UK. Really popular show it was. I watched it quite a lot, and then I stopped watching it. And then I started up again, and then it finished. So that's that story. Yeah, but if you saw her and you're in the UK, you definitely recognise her. She's Mrs. Mops, and she's just leaving, but she's already made the gruel for Scrooge, which annoyed me a little bit, because it's like, make your own gruel. That's what he normally does, isn't it? Yeah, saves himself money, isn't it, if you ain't got a housekeeper. Anyway, he's there eating his gruel, and it's a bit of an affair, actually. Like, it's not just like seeing faces in the fireplace and then hearing some noises downstairs. Everything starts going off. The fire's like billowing smoke, the doors are slamming, the drawers are open, the bells are ringing, all sorts is going on. And then who should come in but Jacob Marley, played by Jason Alexander. Yeah, from Seinfeld. And I've got to say, I really like Jason Alexander because I'm a massive Seinfeld fan. He's decent enough as Jacob Marley, I suppose. Yeah, I don't think I would have cast him, but then I do like him. So it's good to have him in it. but you know. Yeah, and he sings a song called Link by Link. And what's interesting about this is, you know, after Marley says, I'm off now, look out the window and you can see all the spirits in the street. Well, they do a similar thing, but all the spirits are actually there in Scrooge's room. And there's like a bunch of them, and they're like people that he used to do business with. And there's like a skeleton one because he was bad to the bone. And there's another one who never had a heart, and he opens his chest up and all this cash just starts pouring out of his chest. And there's a bit where Jason Alexander does like a very quick coin trick. He makes a coin disappear. And you might not know this, but Jason Alexander is actually quite the magician. I have an interest in magic, and I've actually seen videos of him talking about magic tricks that he performs, and he does actually do still perform a bit of magic now and then. Yeah, might not have known that. We all learned something today. So, yeah, then he goes and takes away all the old spirit guys with him. And Scrooge goes to bed. The clock chimes one. And this is interesting. You've got a candle there. And in the smoke of the candle appears the ghost of Christmas past, who is Jane Krakowski, who you definitely would know from Ally McBeal or 30 Rock. And she was also in Kimmy Schmidt as well. Now, I am aware that Jane Krakowski is an attractive woman. But in this, her legs, goodness me, they're glorious. She's wearing this like really high cut split skirt, and she insists on showing you her legs, and you can't take your eyes off them. Well, I couldn't anyway. Yeah, so she comes in and she sort of does, do you know, it's a bit funny actually, because she's almost doing like pole dancing on the bedpost. This is a four poster bed, and she's like twirling herself around them, the dirty girl. And then she says, right, come on in, let's go to your past. So off they go, and we got some big changes coming up, kids. Big changes indeed. There is nothing about him going to school. The first scene we see of Scrooge as a young boy is his dad getting sent to prison, debtor's prison, for 3 years. And poor little Scrooge, him, his sister and his mum are there, like watching him get sent down. And his dad says this to him.
Learn this lesson, Ebenezer. Save your pennies, make your fortune and keep it.
Father!
Save your pennies, son. Make your fortune and keep it.
Yes, father, I will.
Yeah. And then the mum sings this song, God Bless Us Everyone.
Let us love till we die, and God bless us everyone.
And so then it cuts to Scrooge with his first job, and he's working in a boot factory because he's got to work to help pay off his dad's debt. And pretty much they took this from Charles Dickens's life, because Charles Dickens's dad, he got sent to debtor's prison. So Charles Dickens had to go out to work, and he worked in a boot polish factory. In this one, he's working in like just a boot factory where they're actually making the boots. And it's payday, and he says to the guy gives him his money, he's like, oh, I'm going to save all this. And he's there writing a letter to his sister, and he sings a song while he's writing the letter. And then the ghost of Christmas past says that Scrooge never actually did get to see his sister again, which I thought was a bit iffy, really, because his dad was only sent to debtor's prison for 3 years. You'd like to think after 3 years, Scrooge would at least get a chance to see his sister when his dad comes. I don't know. Anyway, after that bit, then it does start to go back to the proper story from the book. And we're at Fezziwig's Christmas party. And Fezziwig himself is played by an actor called Brian Bedford. I wasn't familiar with him, but I thought this was interesting. He appeared in an episode of Frasier and also Mr. St. Nick, which was that film I mentioned earlier that Kelsey Grammer was in when he played, like, I think he played Santa's son. And obviously this scene is set at
Mr. Fezziwig's annual Christmas ball.
Yeah, and then we see Scrooge's girlfriend. Her name, of course, is...
It is Emily.
It's what now?
Emily.
Really?
Emily.
Why? Why are you doing that? There's no need for that. And I read, I don't know how true this is, I read it was because they changed the name to Emily because it was too close to Belle from Beauty and the Beast. It's like, well, it's a different bloody story. Why do you think people are going to get confused with that? It's not like a name Cinderella, is it? It's not. Like, it's a name. People are called Belle. But they weren't having it, so they changed it to Emily. And this is interesting. The first actress to play Emily in the stage production was called Emily Skinner. Yeah. So maybe that's why they called her Emily. I don't know. But they called her bloody Emily. And do you know who plays Emily? Jennifer Love Hewitt. And she is just something else. She's just gorgeous. I've always fancied Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I still do. She's glorious. And she does a blinding job of it, actually. I really like her take on the character. Then we get this fantastic song and dance number. It goes on quite a while, but I ain't complaining because they're really going for it. Loads of lovely dancing. Everyone's having a wonderful time. And then we get a reprise of A Place Called Home, which I should have mentioned earlier. That was the song that Fan and young Scrooge sing to each other when I think he's writing the letter to her. That's when that song comes out. So now she wants to be, you know, she wants to have a home with Scrooge. And then it cuts to Scrooge and Marley have got their own bank now, and customers are coming in and saying, oh, you know, can you lend me some money? And Scrooge is being a bit of a git about it because that's what you'd expect. And then, wouldn't you believe it, his old boss Fezziwig comes in asking for a loan, and he's like, you know, could you lend me some money? And Scrooge's like, no, you're not getting nothing off me, which is really out of order. But that's just Scrooge, I suppose, isn't it? That's why he's a git. But what was interesting was Fezziwig actually ran a bank in this version. And I should have mentioned that earlier at the Christmas party, because I don't think in the book it ever talks about what Fezziwig's business is. I know in The Muppets Christmas Carol, Fozziwig runs a rubber chicken factory, but I don't know what Fezziwig does. But anyway, it turns out in this version he runs a bank, but he's run into hard times and Scrooge won't lend him the money. Then in comes Belle and she leaves him. She tells him, just care about money. It's ridiculous. I've had enough of it. Here's your ring back. And her accent at this point is really interesting. The point she sounds blind in, other times it sounds a bit interesting. I'm not saying it sounds wrong, I'm just saying it sounds interesting. But I will forgive that, because I will forgive anything of Jennifer Love Hewitt. She's gorgeous. Yeah, let me play a bit of her accent. Have a listen.
I never wanted anything but your love. The two of you here. All day, late into the night. Sooner or later, you'll work yourselves to death. I won't be here to see it.
Yeah, see what I mean? Then it cuts to like years and years later, and they're still running the bank together, and Marley has kept all his hair. Yeah, so he's done better than George Costanza, hasn't he? He's got a full head of flowing locks, and then he dies, which is not like in the book, because in the book, he dies in his own bed, whereas this, he actually dies at work, and Scrooge is there, very upset about it. So then it cuts back to Scrooge back in bed, and he goes to snuff out the candle, and he lifts the little candle snuffer, and the smoke shows the Ghost of Christmas Past again, Jane Krakowski, and she says this.
These are the shadows of the things that have been. They are what they are. Do not blame me.
And then he snuffs it out again, and I thought that was brilliant, because it was similar to the book. But instead of like trying to snuff out the whole full-grown person with a great big candle snuffer, he snuffs out the candle where she's appearing in the smoke. I really like that. I like the way they did that. I thought it was clever. Then it's the Ghost of Christmas Present, and he is played by Jesse L. Martin. If you look on his IMDb, he's been in loads of crap. But what stood out for me is that he was in Muppets Letters to Santa. Yeah, that's right. And don't you know it, I covered Muppets Letters to Santa about a year and a half ago. So, there's that in there. Yes, there is. And also, he was in 12 episodes of Ally McBeal. And you're thinking, big deal. Well, don't forget, Jane Krakowski was in Ally McBeal as well, wasn't she? So, that's something else, isn't it? Yeah. And I think he does a great job, a really good job as the Ghost of Christmas Present. Very jovial. And don't forget, he was the barker trying to sell tickets for this charity Christmas show. And he starts singing this song, Abundance and Charity. And he's doing it on stage at this charity Christmas show that he was selling tickets to the day before. So I thought that was really good as well. I like that. And there's a bit where he's throwing gifts off the stage and Scrooge catches one. And he's sort of, then he's looking across and there's this girl in the audience sort of looking at him. Oh, I ain't got a gift. And he's like, and he puts it in his pocket. And I'm pretty sure the girl, she was Mr. Smythe's daughter. Do you remember the guy whose wife had died? And he wanted Scrooge to let him off the money for a month. Yeah, that's his daughter there. And she's like, oh, I don't get it. So then he gets dragged up on stage by the Ghost of Christmas Present. And he's having a sort of like dance around. He's not really dancing. He's sort of like trying to sort of make his way around all the people on the stage and that. And at the very end, he looks out into the audience and he reaches in his pocket and throws the present to the little girl. And I don't know what I thought of that, because, you know, they shouldn't be able to see him. Then they go to the Cratchits, right, because it's present in the Cratchits, and they're having their Christmas dinner. And Bob Cratchit's getting Tiny Tim, carries him downstairs, and they all sit down to dinner, and Mrs. Cratchit brings out the Christmas pudding. That's great, yeah? That's great. Is it? No, because they haven't even had their main course yet. So this scorching hot Christmas pudding is going to be like sitting there just cooling down, so that by the time they finish their chicken, and don't forget, their chicken instead of goose, by the time they finish their chicken, that's just going to be stone cold, isn't it? Don't forget, this is the middle of winter, and I'm guessing they've got a reasonably drafty house. I know they've got the fire going and that, but it's not going to be warm enough to keep that pudding warm. Not like, well, you've got to eat a whole course. What was she thinking? Goodness. Right. They start singing a song, Christmas Together, and that carries on as Scrooge is going around the town and seeing all the people enjoying Christmas. It's the same song, everyone's singing it. Then we go to Fred's house. And this is interesting, because I don't think I've seen this before. Fred has got a son. Yeah, like a young lad, probably about 11 or 12, something like that. And I thought, fair play, something different. And then they're singing a song, and as the song sort of reaches its climax, it's cutting from all the different people like in the town back to Fred's family. And then it cuts to the mourning dad. You know, the dad whose wife died, who I just mentioned a second ago, his daughter was at the Christmas show. Yeah, their family as well. They're trying to enjoy Christmas. And it cuts from all these ones. And then the song ends. And then does Fred and his family play a game? Possibly. But we don't get to see it. Bit disappointed about that. That's one bit that I like to see. But, you know, bollocks to him. Then Scrooge wakes up in his bed, right? And he hears banging on his door. So he goes downstairs and opens the door. No one's there. Closes the door. Turns around. And there's the blind woman that was begging earlier. And she transforms into like, well, she's wearing white clothes instead of like her old dark clothes. And she's all like, interesting looking. See, that was it. And I just said interesting looking. That gives you nothing to work with. You're going to have to watch it just to see what she looks like. And do you know she's played by, right? Okay, she's played by Geraldine Lee Chaplin, daughter of Charlie Chaplin. That's right, it's Charlie Chaplin's daughter there, yeah. So she's been in loads of things. I looked up what she'd been in on IMDb, loads of stuff. Nothing particularly memorable, apart from she played a character in the Charlie Chaplin biopic. Yeah, you ever seen that? With Robert Downey Jr. played Charlie Chaplin. She's still kicking as well, don't you know? And all of her bit takes place in this graveyard. So at the start, there's like loads of grave diggers all digging this bloke's grave. And then in walk these two businessmen, and the Beadle, from, he was in it earlier on as well. He was in the Royal Exchange. He was like Mr. Bumble from Oliver Twist. They're there talking about some bloke who's died, and you know, all they know is he's dead and they don't really care. This was really cool, I thought. Scrooge was like, well, who on earth could they be talking about? And the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come just looks at him as if to say, are you an idiot? Just, yeah, I like that. Because normally you don't see the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come's face, do you? Yes, that's why this was good. So then, again, don't forget, this is all happening in the graveyard. There's like a bed in the graveyard, and you've got Mrs. Mops tearing off the bed curtains and the bed clothes as well, and the shirt that the bloke's buried in. And we see it is Scrooge. There he is. He's half naked by the end of it. So Scrooge can be in no doubt of who they're talking about and who they're ripping off. And it's like the Undertaker as well, although it looks like there's two Undertakers. They go and see the Rag and Bone Man, and he gives them some cash, and then the two Undertakers are trying to steal the money off Mrs. Mops, which isn't very nice. Then we see the Cratchits, and they're in the graveyard because they actually are there to see a grave, because Tiny Tim has died. And then Scrooge starts singing this song about how he's changed. It's called Yesterday, Tomorrow, Today. And he's talking about how he's going to change and he's going to be a good guy from now on. And then that ends and loads of people turn up. They're all like ghosts. And it's the ghost of his mum and a fan. And they start singing another reprise of God Bless Us Everyone, which was the song that she sung when his dad went to prison. And then Scrooge's grave starts to like crack and fall apart in on itself, and Scrooge starts trying to run away, and the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come like sort of flies after him and chucks a bedsheet over him, and he's like wrestling with the bedsheet, and he wakes up and he's back home in his own bed. And it cuts to these two boys outside. They're going to start singing to him, singing this awful song. It's not a Christmas carol, awful is.
Hear the bells all over land, sound out.
And he opens the door, and this is the same kid from earlier. Do you remember I said you had like the Artful Dodger character that was nicking a watch and giving it to a bloke that looked a bit like Fagin? Well, this is him again. So he's the boy in the street, and Scrooge is like, what day is it? He doesn't say Walker, No, but Scrooge is like, you know, go and buy that turkey for me. Do you know how much it is? Kid goes, yeah, it's a sovereign. He goes, well, here's two sovereigns. Keep the change. That is a lot more, a lot more. It's like eight times as much as in the book. That's a lot of money. He's probably going to spend it all in one place. So that's a shame. But that's fine. Do you know what, actually, I looked up the actor and I forgot, I didn't write down his name because it ain't that important, he hadn't done a lot. But the following year, he was in a movie adaptation of Oliver Twist. And he didn't play the Artful Dodger, he played Hungry Boy. So there's that as well. Then Scrooge is going around the street singing about how wonderful everything is. And he sees Mr. Smythe, the man who lost his wife, remember that? And he's there with his daughter and he says, I've written off your debt, here's a load of cash, go and buy some toys for your daughter. So that's delightful. And then he sees Jane Krakowski's character. Did I mention that she was a lamplighter? I think I did. If I didn't, that was her job in this, like a proper character. And then he sees the barker, you know, who's trying to sell tickets for this charity show. And Scrooge gives him a lot of cash and says, give tickets to all the children, which was nice. Yeah. And then he sees the blind woman and he gives her some cash and she looks up and she ain't blind anymore. So that's nice as well. It's like Scrooge's goodness has given her eyesight back. Also, at this point, I'd like to mention that Scrooge is like, he's not hobbling anymore. Like, when I said he first comes in, he's like all stooped and hobbling. Now it's a bit of a Nanny McPhee thing, you know, where he's a nice guy now. So he's walking a lot better. And then he goes to Cratchit's and he does the old moody bit of the doors, like, oh, why aren't you at work? Just, he ripped it off of Michael Caine, didn't he? In A Muppet Christmas Carol. He saw that. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna play it like that. That's fine. And then they're all happy because he gives them this massive turkey. Then they go to see Fred. And Fred's happy because everyone's lovely. And then they're all just singing in the street. And that's nice. Yeah. It is a nice film. And my history with it, I remember when it came out. And I didn't bother watching it. I remember it being on TV just before Christmas back in, it would have been 2004 or 5. And I remember seeing it on, I was like, nah. And I watched a little bit of it. I remember turning it on and it was on. I was like, nah, I can't be bothered with that. And a few years later, I sat down and watched it. And I really did enjoy it. I thought it was alright. And I remember it being really quick. It seemed to fly by. And I've watched it twice the last couple of days so I could talk to you guys about it. And I really enjoyed it again. And I don't think I'm going to rush back to it every year, but I think I will watch it again. And I recommend you do too. Now, I watched it on Amazon, but if you want to watch it, you could watch it on YouTube. So it's free for everyone. And like I said, I think it's a decent version. The songs are good. The acting's good. Jane Krakowski's legs are good. Jennifer Love Hewitt's gorgeous. What more could you ask for? There we go. So this episode's recommendation is called Artful Dodger. And do you know what? We just finished watching it about a week ago. And I thought, because I saw the lad being like the Artful Dodger character on the Christmas Carol version, I thought, do you know what? Why don't I recommend it? Because it was all right. I quite enjoyed it. So the lad that plays the Artful Dodger, his name's Thomas Brodie Sanger. He was the young lad, Liam Neeson's son, in Love Actually. And he plays the Artful Dodger, like, years after he was in London with Oliver Twist. And to be honest with you, it plays a bit fast and loose with the original text. That aspect of it I wasn't a massive fan of. But you know what? As miniseries go, I quite enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a bit of fun. Could have been worse. Yeah, actually, I'm going to recommend it, but just if you don't like it, I don't care. It was alright. Goodness me, what is this show coming to? And that is it for this episode. Yeah, I really hope you've enjoyed it. I don't think I've got anything else to say before I go, apart from if you want to get in touch, I love hearing from you. So if you want to get in touch, you can do it. You know, I'm on Facebook. I'm not on Instagram. I should be, I think, because it seems like everyone's on Instagram, but I'm not yet. One day. You can email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go on the website, which is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love ya. Merry, happy Christmas.
Hey. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Do you know what kind of train this is?
Huh?
Train. Do you know what kind of train this is? Well, do ya?
Of course. It's a magic train. We're going to the North Pole.
Yeah, I know it's a magic train. Actually, it's a Baldwin 284 S3 class Berkshire type steam locomotive. Built in 1931 as the Baldwin Locomotive Works, it weighs 456,100 pounds.